in the beginning of chapter 5, Arjun asked again about which is better, detachment from work, or, in other words, giving up work in Jnana Yoga, or working in Karma Yoga, but being detached from the fruit of the work. So Krishna's answer was clear, that one should work, but in a detached fashion. And one cannot even maintain his body without work. Rather, one, even if he has knowledge, should work. It is not that just working is for those who have no knowledge, and renunciation of work is for those who have knowledge. It is not like that. Even if one attains the platform of knowledge, one should work. And then, on that platform of knowledge, what is his work like? And that is described as that he is experiencing himself completely different from the body. And he's aware and conscious that when the body is working, he is completely aloof. And he's seeing just the modes of material nature working the body. The body is interacting with the sense objects. He's not influencing anyone. He's not being influenced by anyone. It is just the modes of material nature acting. He is detached and aloof. Then, after explaining that if one performs his duty with this detachment in knowledge, knowing that he's not his body, which is actually the fruit of the mode of goodness, this knowledge, then he will not get any sinful reactions. And as has already been explained, if one tries to give up activity because the soul itself is active, one will act, one will be forced to act, and one will get reaction. So there will be no akarma in his karma. In his akarma, he will get karma. He will get karma for his so-called inactivity. But a person who is doing karma in a detached fashion, a nishkam karma, there is a karma for him. There is no reaction. He is situated as a lotus leaf is situated on the water. There may be a muddy or watery situation, but that lotus flower is above the water because of the stem. Although it seems to be situated on the water, it is actually above the water. So after explaining this glorious position of someone who has knowledge, and how someone, on the other hand, who is attached to the fruit of his work, as opposed to detached, who is in ignorance, how that person becomes entangled in the fruit of his work, Krishna begins to explain in 14, 15, and 16 some further elements of transcendental knowledge. Now, so far, the transcendental knowledge has been glorified in so many ways as that which frees us from reaction, brings us madbhavam so dagatsati, brings us, situates us in love of Krishna. And what is that transcendental knowledge? It begins in the second chapter when Krishna describes dehinos minyata dehe komanam jovanam jara, or even before that, agama payino anityas. Gatasun agatasun cha nanu so chanti pandita. That there is no death actually for the soul, because the soul is eternal and therefore one shouldn't lament. So that's the beginning of transcendental knowledge, that one knows that he is not the body. He knows that he is a spirit soul. And this is the knowledge that is born of goodness. But above this knowledge, is knowledge of Krishna, which is described in the beginning of the fourth chapter. Yada yada hidamasya puritranaya sadunam vinash ejopisam avyayatma bhutanam bhutanam ishvaropisam prakritistam adhistaya sambhavatyatmamaya. That Krishna comes when he appears in this world by his atma maya, by his internal energy. And his appearance, Krishna's transcendental appearance, has nothing at all to do with the modes of material nature. And although he appears to be in this world, he actually has nothing to do with this world. Therefore he has lotus feet. As does his exalted pure devotee, have lotus feet. They are not touching this world, practically speaking. They are completely detached, because they are attached to Krishna. So many different forms of transcendental knowledge have been described. And in this chapter, Krishna will explain another element of transcendental knowledge. Another one that was described in the chapter 4 was transcendental knowledge, what we call transcendental knowledge applied to work. That Krishna is detached from the fruit of his work. And because he's detached, that shows that he's aloof. So that's just another pointer to Krishna's having nothing to do with the material world whatsoever. He is completely satisfied, situated and being served by his own internal energy. Situated in and being served by his own internal energy. Now, one other element of transcendental knowledge is described in this 13th, 14th, excuse me, in the 14th. The embodied spirit soul, master of the city of body, does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature. So this is similar to the same point, that the living entity, although he thinks in material consciousness that he is doing everything, actually he is not doing anything. He is aloof, as was previously described. He is spiritual, and all this is happening, the body's actions and reactions going on the material platform. So the material nature is the doer in material activities. But then we know also that the material nature is working under Krishna's direction. So is it Krishna who is doing everything? He is the ultimate doer? And the answer is not really. Because although Krishna's sanction is necessary for anything to happen in this world, no one can do anything without Krishna saying it is acceptable. Unless he allows it, nothing can happen. Both the thief and the policeman are dependent on Krishna to do what they want to do. But yet, because Krishna, as has been described in the fourth chapter, is aloof, he's not attached, he's just sanctioning according to the desires and according to what the individual deserves. According to the individual's desires and according to what he deserves. He is simply sanctioning, and he is the Paramatma, the Parameshwara, and he is the Supersoul. He is situated in everyone's heart. Krishna is in everyone's heart. Ishvara Savabhutanam Riddhishe Arjuna Tishyati. He is there. Savasya Chaham Riddhi Sanavisto. He is there in everyone's heart. And he is the ultimate controller of the material energy and of the jivatma. These two shaktis of the Lord, the Paramatma, is the ultimate controller. Yet, he is detached from anything material. And he, although sanctioning everything, is as the Supersoul, doesn't actually take any responsibility for anything that the living entity does. The living entity must take responsibility himself. And the material energy reciprocates with these desires of the living entity. So, when one understands that this is the situation, that he is aloof from the material world. This is text 16 now. When, however, one is enlightened with the knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything. as the sun lights up everything in the daytime. So no longer, when we look at a living entity, we don't see an old man, we don't see a dog, we don't see a cat. When one has this knowledge, we don't see an American, we don't see a male, we don't see a female, we don't see a fly. We see living entities, souls, who are within material bodies, created by Prakriti, by the material energy, with the sanction of the Supersoul. And all this is being sanctioned by the Supersoul, but all is going on simply on the potency of the material energy based on the living entity, the soul's desires. So we begin to see that. Because we have knowledge that we are not the body and we are detached, we begin also to see others in that way. Amazing vision. Ascaryavat, remember that amazing verse from the second chapter? That one who hears about the soul is amazing because the soul is amazing and the hearing process is also amazing. What to speak of seeing it, the soul in action. So this Bhagavad Gita gives us, through providing transcendental intelligence, the ability to hear and see and know the soul and his position, and therefore see all living entities. So a person in that consciousness, there is no darkness for such a person. He is not entangled in the material energy whatsoever. That is sattvam sanjayate jnanam. Actually, we cannot say he is not entangled in the material energy whatsoever. He is actually situated in goodness, such a person. His nescience is destroyed. He doesn't have ignorance. The basic ignorance is identification with the body and mind. So he doesn't have that. And his knowledge reveals the situation. He sees living entities in their karma. That's what he is seeing. Then, but he's in the material world still. Because sattvam sanjayate jnanam, and sattvam is not vishuddha sattvam, it is material. The mode of goodness is material. And he has knowledge, but he's in the material world. Knowledge, this level of knowledge, cannot give us liberation. It is the product of the mode of goodness. And the mode of goodness is in the prison house of the material world. Although it is exalted and elevated within that prison house, but it is still within the material world. So how does one actually get out of the material world? I remember actually the first question that I ever asked Srila Prabhupada was at a Sunday feast in 1968. It was actually just at when Jayadvaita Brahmachari was initiated. Prabhupada gave a lecture about Prahlad Maharaj and that Sunday feast, and the Jagannath deities were installed in New York at that time. And Prabhupada gave the lecture, and he was saying that in the lecture he said devotees are in the mode of goodness. So I had been chanting already for a few months. That was probably in March or February of 1968. I'd been chanting since January, February, March. So already I knew everything. So I said to Prabhupada, he said, any questions? So I raised my hand. And he said, I asked him, you said that the devotees are in the mode of goodness, and I thought that devotees are transcendental to the mode of goodness. So Prabhupada was very tolerant. And he said, yes, the devotees are transcendental, but they generally act in the mode of goodness. Because the mode of goodness is the jumping off platform. The general action is in the mode of goodness. Because the mode of goodness is the springboard, is the dwara, or the gate to the transcendental platform. Because you're detached, you know that you're not this body. So you don't value anything within this material world. As we heard, and we'll hear again in the 6th chapter, and we'll hear again in the 18th chapter, he's completely detached. We heard in the 2nd chapter, in the 6th chapter, oh, that's the one I remember right now, he looks on pebbles, stones, and gold is the same. He looks at his friend, the person who likes him, dislikes him. In the Sthita Deha Muni, he sees everyone, whether they hate him or love him or are neutral towards him, he sees them equally. He doesn't want to gain anything from the material world. He's situated in that pristine... I remember him from last time. He's situated in that platform where there's such happiness in that good platform that there is nothing he can gain from the sense objects of this material world. How exalted. But he's in the material world nonetheless. So how does he get out? How does he use that springboard to get free from even the mode of goodness? And that is described in text 17. In text 16 it describes how his knowledge and his consciousness was fixed on his self, on the fact that he is not his body. And he is knowing that whatever he is doing, it is just the modes of material nature doing it. He's doing nothing. He's fixed on his self, his spiritual self. He is self-realized in that sense. But how to become liberated when one's intelligence, 17, when one's intelligence, mind, faith, and refuge are all fixed in the Supreme. He's fixed on the Supersoul. Then one becomes fully cleansed of all misgivings through complete knowledge, that he understands that he is part and parcel of Krishna or the Supersoul, or he's part of Brahman, depending upon what his realization is. So then he understands his position in relationship to everything. So he's fully cleansed of all misgivings because of his focusing on the Supreme through complete knowledge, and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation. His knowledge is now complete. He identifies with the Supreme. So if he's in Brahman, if he wants to be in Brahman consciousness, just thinking, I am spirit, I am a spirit soul, isn't enough. He has to worship the Supreme Spirit as Krishna, as Paramatma. And then and only then he can even become Brahman realized. By focusing, understanding your soul, and then focusing on the Supreme, then you can realize Brahman. Without that bhakti, you cannot even get Brahman realization. Without a tinge of bhakti, without the mercy of Krishna, you cannot even get Brahman realization. And Paramatma realization, and of course Vaikuntha realization, or of course ultimately Goloka Vrindavan Krishna realization. This all comes by focusing on the Supreme. Vedanti tat tatva vigyas tatvam yajganam advam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti sabyute. You can come in, but you should sit quietly. Come on, we know you can do it. Because we know that you're not 5 years old, we know you're a soul. So you should hear. So when one focuses on the Supreme, then and only then does he proceed straight on the path of liberation. He gets out of the material world by focusing on the Supreme. And of course, in Krishna consciousness, one realizes his achintya relationship with the Supreme, the Parabrahman, as he is one with him. Not different, but yet not equal. As Prabhupada explained so nicely in the purport, simultaneous identity and individuality. We are simultaneously one with Krishna, and yet we're individuals. So If one fixes his mind on Krishna at this point in Bhakti Yoga from this platform, how quick will he make advancement? So what are the symptoms of someone, if he fixes his consciousness, here the level, the basic level talked about is the supersoul, understanding the supersoul at this point. That is the next verse. Vidya Vinaya Sampane, Brahmani Gavi Hastini, Shuni Chaiva Swapake Cha, Pandita Samadarshana. So with the purity that comes from his education, the humble sage has true knowledge. He knows that everyone is a soul, he is fixed on the super soul, and therefore he sees with equal vision a learned and gentle brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. Because what is he seeing? He's seeing the paramatmas in everyone's heart. And different living entities. There are souls, and everyone's right next to the paramatma, like two birds sitting in a tree. And he sees that according to the living entity's desire and according to what he deserves, he has been awarded one type of body or another type of a body. So he sees them equally as souls and as being with the paramatma. And that due to the paramatma's sanction, all this has taken place. So one person, one soul is in ignorance and he takes on the body of a dog or a dog eater. Or another has more predominance of passion, so he is elephant, trapped within the cage of an elephant body. Or another person in the mode of goodness, the cow or the Brahman body. But throughout all these different situations in the modes with their different sense objects and happiness and miseries, he sees their equality. That they are just souls, and Krishna has sanctioned them attaining this body according to their desires and their what they deserve. So this is equal vision, samadarshana, pandita samadarshana. So this is can be translated in many ways. This samadarshana, if you are a Mayavadi, how will you translate this? He sees everything samadarshan. How would a Mayavadi translate that?
Everybody's one.
Everything is one.
Yes, yes.
All in one.
Yes, everything is one. Two in one, five in one. Everything is one. But this is also samadarshana means that he sees the equality in all living entities, that the soul is there, that the super soul is there. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has revealed to us a very secret and sweet understanding of this. That what is his darshan? What does darshan mean? His vision. What does he see? So what is his sama darshan? For a devotee, an exalted devotee, what is his darshan? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, sama. Sa means with, and Ma means either the goddess of fortune if you are seeing Narayan, or so who is with Narayan? Excuse me, who is with Ma, or the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi? That is Narayan. So this is his vision, or the supreme Ma is Srimati Radharani. He is the original goddess of fortune. So who is with Radharani? Only Krishna. Who is saying Sa? Sa means with. Who is with the goddess of fortune? Who is saying that? Who has said like that? The big fellow in the back row is sleeping. Okay.
So Ma means Radharani?
Ah. She's the Supreme Mother. So who is with Radharani? It is Krishna. So that's the darshan, or the vision, the ultimate vision, that yam sham sundaram achintya gunas rupam. So the one who has love, premanjana churita bhakti valochanena shanta sadaiva riddhyeshu valokayanti yam sham sundaram. He sees shamasundar everywhere. This is his darshan. So this is the vision of someone who has focused his consciousness on the super soul, as explained in text 17. He's seeing like this. He's seeing the true equality of all living entities. And 19. Those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. They are flawless like Brahman, and they are already situated in Brahman. So let's understand the situation. Their minds are established in sameness and equanimity. So the sameness means, because they are situated as spirit souls, they are aloof from everything in the material world. Their minds are focused, concentrated, vyavyasatmika buddhi, focused on the order of Guru and Krishna. And whether it's raining or whether it's cold, whether it's hot, whether it's this, it's that, they're just focused on that. They're equal to all material conditions because they're actually situated on that spiritual platform. And when they see others, they are not seeing the differences in bodies, but they are seeing the sameness, that everyone is a soul and is in a particular situation because of the super soul sanction. And when someone does something to him, positive, negative, he's just seeing that the person isn't doing this. This is the modes of material nature acting, and the super soul is sanctioning. If Krishna has not sanctioned this, how could it possibly happen? So therefore he's fixed in sameness. So that means that he's actually attained liberation due to his fixedness on the Supreme. He's already situated in Brahma, on the Brahma platform. And he's conquered the conditions of birth and death. That means he is liberated, free from the prison house of the material world. So what is, so it explains that the minds are established in sameness and equanimity. Here, that's the symptoms of one situated on the Brahma platform. So what is that equanimity? What does that mean? That is explained in text 20, the next verse. A person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant, nor laments upon obtaining something unpleasant, who is self-intelligent, who is unbewildered, and who knows the science of God, is already situated in transcendence. So, both one practicing in sadhana and one who is perfect, they should both act on this platform, that we have to become neutral in dealing with the material world and not take anything that happens within the material world seriously, because we will become entangled. We should not get angry when something bad happens. We should not get elated when something good happens on the material platform. We have to become neutral. This is equanimity. And this should be practiced by devotees. And it is the situation of one in perfection as well.
What is self-intelligent? What does that mean?
Their intelligence is fixed in the self. Means that they're situated by means of their intelligence, at least, as a sadhaka, on knowing that they are souls. It is done by strong, fixed, trained up Krishna conscious intelligence. Samstabhyatmatmanatmana jahi shatram evam bhude param bhutva. Remember that one? That using intelligence one fixes himself. So self is not capitalized, so it doesn't refer to fixed on the super soul here. But he knows the science of God, that means he is fixed on the super soul. Here, Prabhupada, the Sanskrit is, this steadiness of mind is called sthira buddhi, or self-intelligence. He is not therefore never bewildered by mistaking the gross body for the soul. He is not joyful in achieving something, nor does he lament in losing anything which is related to his body. This steadiness in mind is called sthira buddhi, or self-intelligent. It means steady intelligence, because he's fixed on not being part and parcel of the material world. 21 and 22. Such a liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. He's enjoying on the spiritual platform. In this way, a self-realized person enjoys unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the Supreme. Just like one who is eating sweets, he has no tendency to eat mud. So someone who is fixed in enjoying on this platform has no tendency for sense gratification. And therefore, Prabhupada aptly quotes Jamunacharya here. Since I have been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, realizing every new pleasure in him, whenever I think of sex pleasure, I spit at the thought and my lips curl with distaste. And in the next verse, another important verse. Yehi samsparjaja bhoga. Bhoga. Samsparjaja means by contact with the material senses. So one who is bhoga, or enjoying by contact with the material senses, he should understand that this he, yehi, means certainly. Let me just tell you one thing. Yeah? So one should understand that he, yehi samsparjaja bhoga, the one who is enjoying the objects of the senses by combining the objects of the senses with the sense, he should know that dukkha yona evite. Yona means the source. They're the source of not pleasure. But this combination of the senses and sense objects is the dukkha yona. It is the source of misery, of dukkha, misery. Why? Adyantavanta kanteya, because these pleasures have a beginning and an end. And therefore, na teshu ramate Buddha, the Buddha, or the wise person, he does not rama, he does not try to get pleasure from combining the senses and the sense objects, because they have a beginning and an end. So that means that when you have the pleasure, when the senses are combined with the sense objects, you have it and you're enjoying yourself, but there's always fear, because you know someone's going to take it or you're going to lose it. So you're afraid of losing it. And when you don't have it, you're in anxiety and fearful, because you see someone else does have it and you want it. So when you have something, if I would say to you, Janu Prabhu, I'm going to give you a present that's very wonderful. If you have it, it will make you miserable. And if you don't have it, it will make you miserable. Would you accept this wonderful present? No, of course not. And that is sense gratification. Miserable. Dukkha yona yevite, the source of misery. A person who neither An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses, O son of Kunti. Such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise man does not delight in them. So therefore, human life is not meant for this combining of the senses with the sense objects. And in the purport, Prabhupada quotes, Nayam deha, deha, bhajam, riloke. Those who have material bodies in this, who are souls situated in material bodies, but in this world, kastan kaman arhati vidbhujam ye, that they, arhati means deserve. They do not, they should not delight in pleasures which are deserving of the stool eaters, the dogs and the hogs. Rather, this human life. Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shudye. That this life is meant for tapasya, austerity, just to act, as was explained in a few verses prior, just to act for purification. And that is called saranagati or surrender, when we will accept whatever is good for our advancement in spiritual life. And then what will happen? What will be the result? Brahma Sokyam Tvanantam, unending spiritual pleasure. So before giving up this present body, if one is able to tolerate the urges of the material senses and check the force of desire and anger, and he is well situated and he is happy in this world, if one could become situated in goodness, so how long should one tolerate the forces of desire and anger? That means passion and ignorance. How long? And the answer is, as long as he has a material body, one has to tolerate them. They come and they go. Just like the water flows into a river. The river flows into the ocean. What chapter is that analogy from? What chapter?
Second.
Okay, just wanted to make sure. Second chapter. As rivers flow into the ocean, that is the way to become happy. The ocean is deep, it is vast, therefore it doesn't become agitated. Rivers flow in, it doesn't go up, and in the dry season, it doesn't go down. And it's so deep. So our consciousness has to become deep like that, and not get agitated by the desires, nor think that we can become satisfied by satisfying the desires. So such a person who does not act on the material platform, he is actually happy in this world. So one whose happiness is within, who is active and rejoices within, and whose aim is inward, is actually the perfect mystic. He is liberated in the Supreme, and ultimately he attains the Supreme purport. Unless one is able to relish happiness within, how can one retire from the external engagements meant for deriving superficial happiness? A liberated person enjoys happiness by factual experience. He can therefore sit silently in any place and enjoy the activities of life from within. Such a liberated person no longer desires external material happiness. This state is called Brahmabhuta, attaining which one is assured of going back to Godhead, back to home. So in that verse, one ultimately attains the Supreme. In 25, those who are beyond the dualities that arise from doubts, whose minds are engaged within, who are always busy working for the welfare of all living beings, and who are free from all sins, achieve liberation in the Supreme. So that, if you... I'll read it again. Tell me if you think that sounds difficult. Those who are beyond the dualities that arise from doubts, whose minds are engaged within, who are always busy working for the welfare of all living beings, and who are free from all sins, achieve liberation in the Supreme. Does that sound difficult? Nah, anyway. For some of us, it sounds difficult. And in the last verse, in 24, after happiness within, active and rejoices within, he is liberated in the Supreme and ultimately attains the Supreme. And this verse sounds so difficult. So in the next verse, if it's so, how long will it take, considering it's ultimately and it's so difficult? So Krishna says here, those who are free from anger and all material desires, who are self-realized, self-disciplined, and constantly endeavoring perfection, are assured of liberation in the Supreme in the very near future. So if it's so difficult, and it is only that one ultimately achieves it, why can one get liberation in the very near future? And the answer, Prabhupada explains in the purport, is why bhakti yoga is so superior. If you are practicing Brahma, to become one with Brahman, there is no question of Brahman showing mercy to you and then helping you. Why? Because it's impersonal. Mercy is a quality, and Brahman has no qualities. So it cannot be merciful, it cannot show you favor, it cannot hear your prayers. So therefore it is very difficult because you have to do all this work. And Paramatma is name dveshos dinati priya. No one is inimical to me, and no one is dear, priya to me. Samoham savabhutishu. I am equal to everyone. But when one practices Krishna consciousness, maya diteshu chapyaham, that the relationship with Krishna is special, and he personally takes care of the devotee. And Prabhupada explains this. By vision, by meditation, by quoting this verse from, I think it's from one of the Puranas. By vision, by meditation, and by touch, only do the fish, the tortoise, and the birds maintain their offspring. Similarly do I also, O Padmaja. So that means that Krishna takes special care of his devotees. So if we become dear devotees to Krishna, we can count on Krishna taking care of us, just as the fish, the tortoise, and the birds maintain their offspring, Krishna will also maintain and take care of us. And then the path of self-realization is not so difficult when we achieve the mercy of Krishna. Now this, I would like to finish the chapter today for a reason I will explain to you in 1 minute. So we'll finish that now. So this is describing liberation. Now the next two verses describe how to achieve that liberation. And remember the steps. First by working. And then, even though one may be attached when one's working, then gradually by getting transcendental knowledge, one becomes detached. And one works still when he's detached, and his knowledge is increasing. And as one's knowledge increases, one becomes focused on the soul. This is the steps of the yoga ladder. And then, when one understands that the super soul is there sanctioning everything, then he's focusing on the supreme, and then he's completely detached from the material world, always focusing his consciousness on the supreme, and he is liberated. Now, what's going to be explained in the next two verses is how to attain that same platform of liberation, not through working, not through karma yoga as has been described, but through astanga yoga. Shutting out all external sense objects, keeping the eyes and vision concentrated between the two eyebrows, suspending the inward and outward breaths within the nostrils, and thus controlling the mind, senses, and intelligence, the transcendentalist aiming at liberation becomes free from desire, fear, and anger. One who is always in this state is certainly liberated. So this sutra describing Astanga Yoga will be explained in the next chapter, in chapter 6. It will be further explained. Prabhupada explains in the purport. After explaining the above principles of liberation in the Supreme, the Lord gives instruction to Arjuna as how one can come to that position by the practice of mysticism or yoga known as Astanga Yoga, which is divisible into an eightfold procedure called Yam, Niyam, Asan, Pranayam, Pratyahara, Dharan, Dhyan, and Samadhi. In the sixth chapter, the subject of yoga is explicitly detailed, and at the end of the fifth is only a preliminary explanation. And finally, the last verse in this chapter, also an essential verse, Bhoktaram jagatapasam savaloka maheshwaram suridam savabhutanam yatvamam shantim vichyate. So by the practice of karma, one comes to the platform of focusing on the super soul, and now how to bring that to the platform of, or jnana for that matter, how to bring that to the platform of Krishna will be described here. Bhoktaram jagatapasam. So Krishna is explaining that of all jaga, so who performs jaga? The ones practicing karma. And tapasya, who performs tapasya? The one practicing jnana. So Krishna is the bhokta, or the enjoyer, of all austerities and all penances. So he says, he's going to say, me. It is me. So the devotees understand me, meaning the one who Krishna is pointing to, himself. Or it can be understood as the Paramatma. And that will be brought to the next level in the end of the sixth chapter. But that Krishna is the bhokta of all, the enjoyer of all sacrifices and austerities. And he is the Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. You are performing a jaga to one demigod or another demigod, the controller of Swargaloka, or the controller of Indraloka, or the controller of this loka or that loka or Pitriloka. But Krishna is Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. One demigod may be the controller of one planet, but Krishna is Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. He's the controller of all planets. So he is the enjoyer of all sacrifices and austerities. And he is the controller of all the planets and demigods, and also Suridam Savabhutanam. He is in everyone's heart. It is he who is in everyone's heart as the Super Soul, as the friend. He is the friend of everyone situated in the heart. Suridam Savabhutanam. Gyatvamam, one knowing this, Shantim Richati, one achieves Shanti or peace. So this is more transcendental knowledge, to bring everything into perspective. That Krishna is the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerity. And it's Krishna who is the controller, the supreme controller of all the planets and demigods. And it's Krishna who is in everyone's heart. And if we know this, then real peace exists, which only exists on the liberated platform, detached from all material activities and desires. So Prabhupada explains in the purport just right at the beginning. This fifth chapter is a practical explanation of Krishna consciousness, generally known as Karma Yoga. The question of mental speculation as to how Karma Yoga can give liberation is answered herewith. To work in Krishna consciousness is to work with the complete knowledge of the Lord as the predominator. Such work is not different from transcendental knowledge. So there are so many different levels of transcendental knowledge, and ultimately, what is transcendental knowledge? It is knowledge of all the intimacies of service in Krishna Leela. This is the ultimate transcendental knowledge. Sometimes this is called Diksha. All this transcendental knowledge is important in all its different levels. Okay, are there any questions? Mahababa Prabhu.
I have two questions. One, when you said that Srila Prabhupada said devotees on the platform of goodness, and here in the text 19, it said that a person, true knowledge, is situated on the platform of Brahman. So which platform is that actually?
That was the question I asked him. That generally the devotees who are pure will act in the mode of goodness. It looks, it appears in the mode of goodness. You don't act in the mode of passion or ignorance in Krishna's service. Generally in the mode of goodness, because the mode of goodness has qualities which are practically transcendental. So practically the mode of goodness is practically transcendental, because it's just like if we could say that Chaitanya Priya is in the room. He's not in the room, he's at the door of the room, but he's practically in the room. So the mode of goodness is the gate or the doorway to the transcendental platform.
The second question is that the humble sages see everyone with equal vision. But how does he treat everyone? Because Srila Prabhupada said, no, I make distinction. I see that you're a thief now.
He is treating them equally.
But should we treat equally or not?
Yeah, but you have to know how to treat equally. Just like one child, you have two children. One of them is very good in school and you give a sweet to him. And the other one is very bad in school today. So you shake your finger at him. Are you treating them equally? Equal, with equal affection? You don't know? What do you think, Ajahn? Yeah, equal affection, but it's manifested. The affection manifests differently. So we should... So depending upon what platform we're on, we will treat different people differently. Now the Madhyam devotee is requested to treat four different types of devotees, four different types of
beings differently.
The Lord, he worships the devotees he makes friendship with, the innocent he shows compassion to, and the atheistical inimical he avoids. That is not equal vision. He has to make those distinctions. So this is describing someone who's on that platform, Vidya Vinaya Sampanna, who's actually on the transcendental platform.
So could we say that since there's no pure goodness in the material world is always mixed, tinged with the passionate ignorance, only a person who is self-realized can act really on pure goodness in his material world?
Of course. But no, he's not in the material world.
Because in the material world there is no
pure goodness. Pure goodness is Vishuddha Sattva. That is what the spiritual world is composed of.
I have another question. It's about Jamunacharya. He's a great devotee of Krishna. And he is having an attitude that the person is feeling aversion. You know, curl is spits on his on the thought, and his lips curl with distaste. Looks like a person is feeling aversion for something.
Yes, it is. It's just to teach you and me.
Yeah, I thought also
he's
about. He was on his way to, you know, to attain that stage of pure devotion.
No.
So by that time he.
He's considered always the spiritual master or a spiritual master, Ramanujacharya, exalted Vaishnava. There's so many nice stories of Yamunacharya, Alabandhu, the conqueror.
Isn't it sort of a subtle way of glorifying the one who, the actual taste of Krishna consciousness?
Yeah, that's all it is. It is glorifying Krishna consciousness, that he recoils at the thought. Just like, say if I offer you, we see the pigs out there with their breakfast, with their head in the, and long snouts in the gutter. So if we offered you some gutter snack, so you would recoil at it.
Yeah, in my condition I will recoil, but in a self-realized person,
good.
You see pebbles and gold is the same.
But do you think he'll eat that?
No, it's just...
So it's teaching us, that's one side of it. And the other side of it is that you're neutral towards that.
Yeah.
When you walk past the gutter, you're neutral to it. But still, when you think of actually partaking in it, you become averse because it's against the principles of sanity for a human. So this is against the principles. And he's also playing the part of a sadhaka.
What's a sadhaka?
Practitioner, as opposed to a person who is perfected.
There was also one instance where Prabhupada was on one golf course in Los Angeles. A
golf course in Los Angeles?
The boys were taking him on a morning walk, and there was a golf course right there. And Chevrolet Hills. He saw someone playing golf, and the boys explained what the point of the game was. Probably was crying at the fact that they had, you know, the human civilization focused was so low.
And also about being situated in goodness. We have an idea of what good means. But goodness, good means something really different. Once I was walking with Prabhupada on the peak in Hong Kong. Have you ever been up to the peak?
Yeah.
Have you? You have seen? In Hong Kong?
The peak?
The peak. on Hong Kong side? So we were walking up there, we were on a morning walk there, and suddenly this Chinese man was walking his dog, big, big German Shepherd, and the dog started running over to us. And, you know, Prabhupada, you know, in effulgent and saffron, you know, walking, and this big dog starts running over. So the master started, and he got down and said, "Come away, come on." And the dog, after, you know, just slobbering around for a little while, came running back to his master, who grabbed him and patted him on the head and said, "Good boy, good boy, good boy." And Prabhupada just looked at me and said, "Good?" That was in great disbelief. Okay, let me just explain why we ended quickly. We ended early.
This so text 29, is that, should that be seen as a contrast to text 27 and 28?
No.
Or a continuation?
It's the conclusion.
But this is a standard, and this is more like bhakti to see it as in 29, isn't it?
So?
So is it like Krishna is saying...
He's just before his summer... Say the chapter ended. The chapter, in one sense, ended in 26. Then there is something on Astanga Yoga, and then like a summary. But sometimes, like, I know you've never watched television or anything, but sometimes if there's a serial going on, a continuous one, right before the end, they put in the beginning of the next episode.
Oh, so it's the beginning of the sixth chapter, 27 and 28.
Right. It's the... Stay tuned. You're going to have a thrilling next episode.
Uh-huh.
Just like that.
Maybe because it seems out of
place. Ah, it's just to get you fired up. Thank you, Hari.
Shilogai, Shilaprabhupada, Shikishu.